Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
You still have time to make changes that can save you significant money on your 2012 taxes. Also, keep in mind, it's quite likely that tax refunds will be delayed next year, so you need to put that into your financial planning. My guest is Kevin McCormally. He is the editorial director of Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, and he's going to tell us everything we need to know to save money before the end of the year. Kevin, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Now, this is an interesting thing. Tell us why, first off, why are tax refunds going to be late next year?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. We knew early this year they would be late in 2013 because of an identity theft problem that the IRS has discovered. The fact is, people can steal your Social Security number, and if a crook files your return before you do, he'll get your refund. And when you file your legitimate return, it could take a year to straighten things out. So the IRS has instituted some precautions about that, so we knew that was going to slow it down. But surely the real problem is we simply do not know, as of today, what the tax rules are for 2012. Congress still hasn't decided. Right now, they're so focused on the fiscal cliff, there are a lot of rules that we just don't know what's going to apply for 2012. And if we don't know, the IRS doesn't know, they can't program their computers, it's going to be a miserable filing season.
And you can bet consumers don't know. So let's start out in telling them some of the things that we can tell them that we do know will work for us at this point.
Well, the key things that we know will work for us is charitable contributions are always good. At the end of the year, people are feeling generous. And although charitable contributions may come into play when they solve the fiscal cliff, right now you can be sure that you can deduct what you give to charity if you itemize them. That's a key thing.
Right.
And one thing we really emphasize at Kiplinger is if you're going to make a substantial gift before the end of the year, put away your checkbook. You can give cash and write off the dollar amount that you give, but it's much better to give away appreciated securities like stocks or bonds, because if you've owned that security for more than a year, you get to deduct what it's worth on the day you make the gift, not what you paid for it. And nobody ever has to pay tax on the gain between what you paid and what you give away. So it's sort of a win-win situation for you. The charity doesn't have to pay tax because they're a nonprofit. So
right.
Appreciated property, a big thing this time of year.
Appreciated property. That's a fabulous tip. Now, do you have more stuff online that people can go and read about this?
Oh, absolutely. At Kiplinger.com, we have a tax center. We have all sorts of year-end tax tips there, daily tax tips there, plus our entire archive of tax-saving material. It's the mother load of tax-saving material at Kiplinger.com.
I know the website's excellent. It really is. I use it for references myself, so I know how important it is. And I also know how important it is to get a handle on what's going on right now before we ring out the old year. So we're going to look at charitable deductions. You're talking about not just giving away money, but giving away
appreciated stocks or mutual funds or bonds, real estate if you've got something like that. But usually it's stock because, you know, if you're going to give $10,000, a big contribution to something this year, give $10,000 in cash, you save, you know, if you're in the 25% bracket, $2,500. But if that $10,000 stock you bought 20 years ago for $1,000, if you sold it, you don't tax on that $9,000, and that's going to cost you $1,200,
$1,300.
By giving it away, you eliminate that tax bill, plus you help the charity just as much.
That's right.
And the great thing, Shirley, is if you really like the stock, you think it's going to continue to grow, you can buy it back tomorrow with the money you were going to give the charity and continue to enjoy the appreciation.
Exactly. That makes a lot of sense. All right. What are some of the other things that we need to consider?
Well, we still have time on retirement plans. You know, if you haven't maxed out on your 401k plan, check with your plan sponsor at work and see if you can add something at the end of the year. That money goes in pre-tax, so it saves you money. A lot of people get Christmas bonuses this year. We know they're back in a lot of places. Most firms will let you put part or all of that bonus into your retirement plan where it can grow tax deferred. So consider that. IRA contributions, of course, you can make those until next April 15th. That's not as critical year end.
But is anything that has to be done by the end of the year that you really need to look at real hard?
There is, and a key one here is gifting for estate tax purposes. This is another one. You know, anybody can give away $13,000 a year to any number of recipients each year without worrying about the federal gift tax. And that's important, particularly for higher income people who have to worry about the estate tax down the road, because money you get out of your estate now via the gifts can never be taxed, nor can future appreciation be taxed. The key thing about the gift tax exclusion, it's a one-and-done thing. If you don't use your 2012 gift tax exclusion by December 31st, it disappears. You'll get another one in 2013, and it'll be $14,000 next year instead of $13,000. But this year's $13,000 disappears on December 31st. So if you're planning to make gifts to family members or friends, again, to reduce your taxable estate, do it by the end of the year.
Absolutely. And is there any way you need to reflect that on your taxes? Or no, you just give it and that's your money and you can do it.
The great thing, $13,000 or less, nobody hears about it. If it goes over $13,000, you actually have to file a federal gift tax return.
Oh, yeah, that gets to be a problem.
You know, and you probably won't owe taxes because this year you can give away $5 million above the $13,000 annual gift without paying the tax because you've got a credit. But you go over $13,000, you have to file this form.
Okay, and that's the thing to keep in mind. All right, now you all have something called, and one of the things that you say that consumers do that is really such a mistake is they pay too much income tax and are trying to use Uncle Sam as a bank. But this is really not a very good idea.
No, you know, Shirley, we have been harping on this for the 30 years I've been at Kiplinger about people who are over-withheld. Last year, 104 million tax returns called for refunds. People didn't have to send checks to Washington. They got checks back. And the average refund in 2012, in this last spring, was almost $3,000. And we're trying now to combine the miserable filing season coming up with overwithholding to convince people to finally fix their withholding. Because the less money the IRS has of yours, the less you have to worry about refunds being delayed.
Well, Kevin, why do people do that? Do they miscalculate? Is this somebody who's taking more withholding credits than they should? Or is it people who are filing independently and trying to cover themselves to make sure they don't get fined for not estimating enough taxes? There's so many ways you could go wrong.
It may be a combination of all those things. But what I think happens is the W-4 form, this little tiny form, is what controls withholding. And most people only see it when they start a job and they never think about it again. And on that form, you choose the number of allowances. And each allowance you claim basically tells your employer, don't tax $3,400 of mine. So the more you claim, the less taxable income the employer sees, the less withholding the IRS gets. But most people seem to think that withholding allowances are the same as dependents that you claim on your tax return. Not the same. Dependents equal allowances, but you get allowances for all sorts of things. So Shirley, I think what people do is they start their first job. My daughter did this. She started a job this summer and she said, Dad, how many allowances should I claim? You know, she's married and she only has one job. And I said, well, you claim one for you. You claim one for your husband. And the fact you only have one job, you get to claim another one. Most people don't know that. They don't pay attention. And you're right. People are afraid of being under withheld and getting fined.
You can get fined, IRS. Absolutely.
But, you know, first of all, very few people get fined because 100 million people pay too much. Another part of the problem, Shirley, is people love those refunds. They think it's so great to get that check back. I think it's such a huge mistake for two reasons. One, as you noted, you're giving the money to the IRS a year ahead of time. You don't get any interest on it. But more importantly, I found that when you sit down with your return in February or March or April next year, if when you get to the bottom line, you see you've got $1,200 coming back from the IRS, you're probably going to just sign it, put it in the mail, and be done with it. If you see that you owe the IRS $1,200, I think maybe you're going to say, gee, maybe I should go through those records again. Maybe I should check my December pay stub to see if I made payroll deduction charitable contributions that don't show up in my checkbook. Because if you don't look there and you don't put it there, you don't get credit for it.
And if you don't put it down, nobody's going to know it.
Nobody's going to know. Right. And, you know, people worry way too much about audits. People worry too much about being penalized by the IRS because, you know, if you pay in at least 90% of what you owe, there's no penalty.
Right. Let me just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Kevin McConnell. I got that wrong.
McCormally.
Excuse me,
that's
Kevin.
Right.
I did it right the first time. You know, brain dead here. He is the editorial director for Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. We're talking about ways you can minimize the impact of your taxes, and you still have time to do some significant things. I'm sorry to have interrupted you, Kevin.
That's right, Shirley. When we talk about overwithholding, a few years ago at Kiplinger, we developed a very simple calculator online at Kiplinger.com to show people how to fix their W-4s, and how much it's worth to them. And we think it's really important right now. We're just going into December. So people have got another month's worth of withholding that could come out of their checks. And so if people hear this show and go into their employer and say, give me a new W-4 form, go to our calculator, find out how many extra allowances you should claim, fill out that form. The average person should get $250 more in their paycheck in December than they're going to get because of overwithholding. Mm-hmm. $250 a month is overwithheld on average from 100 million American taxpayers.
People could
use that money for holiday bills, I think. But most importantly, they should start getting the money when they earn it. Our calculator asks three questions. What's your filing status? Married, single, head of household? And it says, look at your 2011 return. Tell us how much you made and tell us how big your refund was. And if your tax situation in 2012...
And you're not asking people for personal identifying information.
Absolutely.
You just want to
not.
Give them the tools to calculate. Because I went through it.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's a great tool.
Thank you. You know, we don't care about their personal information. We just want them to get their money. And we figured out several years ago that most people get the same refund every year. Most people's financial life does not change. So let's give them a calculator that helps them. Now, maybe 5% of the people got married, had a kid, spouse died. There are all sorts of things that can alter this. But if your tax situation in 2012, similar to 2011, this calculator is going to be right on the money. And the example we have in the story is a couple with income under $70,000, which is a low level. And we said if this couple would claim 5 extra allowances, their paycheck in December of this year will go up by $250. And it's not only in December. It goes up $250 in January and $250 in February, all through next year. So you reduce the amount that the government has that you have to worry about that late return.
But you're not making them owing the government. You're just getting them to where they ought to be in terms of what they should be paying.
Absolutely. Shirley, and a thing I like to tell people now, if they've always been reluctant because they love those refunds, you've already banked 11 months worth of the refund. So you've already banked $2,800 for
right.
the average
you
refund.
You got it early.
You're still going to get a check. You know. So we're just saying get a little bit of it in December and straighten things out going forward.
Right.
And don't worry about the refund in 2014. You know, get your money when you're
I guess people are concerned that they're going to owe taxes when tax time rolls around and that they're not just not going to have the resources to pay it. I can understand the concern, but by the same token – put the money in the bank, even though you don't make much of anything on it these days. It's more than nothing.
That's right. Plus, you have access to that money if you have a bill in December.
Yeah.
In July, you can get to the money. If the IRS has the money, you can't get it until a year from now.
Right. So, yeah, and as you're saying, we think that everything is going to be delayed next year in terms of the refunds coming out slower and slower.
Absolutely. Because, you know, one of the things, Shirley, when we talk about what hasn't been done yet, is the alternative minimum tax, which everybody worries about. You know, that was a tax that was put into being in 1969 to get rich people who they thought were paying no taxes. The problem is they've never adjusted the level of what rich is in the IRS's eyes, except every year they pass a little patch, and they didn't pass the patch for 2012. In 2011, 4 million people had to pay the alternative minimum tax. Right now, if Congress does not act by the end of this year, 32 million people will pay the AMT when they file for 2012, the average bill will be $3,500.
Mm.
This is the big element that the IRS is waiting for Congress to fix so it can start programming its computers so it can get into the filing season. And right now, it's not done. It's just sitting on the back burner while the parties argue about what to do about the fiscal cliff. Everybody expects them to get it done. Nobody expects them to tick off 28 million people with an extra $3,500 tax bill. But,
Who knows? It's a guessing game at this point. Who knows what's going to come out of all these meetings? But let's talk about for our listeners and what they can do. Now, one of the interesting things, you had written an article on the most overlooked tax deductions. But you said one of the most significant mistakes that people make is writing their Social Security number on the form and writing it correctly.
That's right. That's what the IRS says every year is the
really?
Most frequent mistake. And again, though, Shirley, I think it's a little misleading because I don't think it's the most frequently made mistake. I think it's the most noticeable mistake.
Right. You probably don't take enough deductions And that's your big mistake.
That's your mistake. That the IRS isn't nearly as concerned about
that's right.
But if you're
it's okay if you don't want to deduct.
If your Social Security number doesn't match what's on your W-2 form that the government has, then the computer just goes haywire and nothing happens. They have to send you a letter, you have to correct it. So that gets noticed. But what we worry about are people who don't take advantage of one of the most overlooked is the reinvesting dividends in mutual funds. Most of us, our dividends, we reinvest them every month when we never see the money.
Right.
But we forget that each one of those reinvestments increases our tax basis, which reduces the gain when we sell them. And years ago, Fred Goldberg, who ran the IRS at the time, told me he thought millions of taxpayers overpaid their taxes every year because they didn't understand the way that rule worked. Apparently, so many of us use mutual funds now. You know, 40 years ago, very few people, only the rich used that kind of investments. Now the middle class people do. They need to know the rules or they're going to overpay their taxes.
All right. The charitable contributions out of pocket. Now you're talking about small contributions, I'm assuming, that you give at church or whatever.
Well, no. What we're talking is not cash. We're talking more not a cash contribution to the church, but the $35 you spend every month making casseroles for the homeless for your church.
Okay.
That's deductible.
Okay.
You know, a friend of mine has
been... What about all this time and money that I spend traveling for Call for Action? And I'm a volunteer. We're a nonprofit.
You're a nonprofit. I think all of your mileage, 14 cents a mile, is going to be deductible. Your time doesn't count. And you know, people complain about that. But, you know,
That's okay. It's hard to estimate because I'm worth so much, Kevin. You just couldn't do it.
You're worth so much, Shirley. And here's the thing that I try to remind people, that if we paid you what you were worth, you'd have to report that as taxable income.
That's exactly right. And I have to pay taxes.
Right. And you have to pay taxes. Anyway. So it sort of evens itself out on that.
On that happy note, let's take a break here and let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Kevin McCormally. He is the editorial director of Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, and he also at Kiplinger.com, which is where you can go and get all this wonderful information. Okay, now what about state taxes? There's something in here about state taxes paid last spring. You forget about those and you don't even put them on your filing.
It's a big mistake that people make because most people, when they sit down for their state income taxes, they look at their W-2 form and they look at how much was withheld for the state during 2012. But if you owe the state of Maryland or Virginia or the district, well, we're not a state, but we try. If you owe extra taxes when you filed that return, remember that that's deductible on your 2012 return. Even though it was 2011 taxes, you paid them in 2012 when you filed that return. Add that amount to the W-2 amount and take advantage
of
that break.
Take advantage of it. Exactly. One thing that you had, this is an article that you had done for Kiplinger.com that I saw, and it had to do with, you know, the things that we overlook. I did not know this, that you can deduct the cost of moving for your first job.
Well, it's one that a lot of people don't know.
That is amazing.
And this applies to a lot of kids.
I guess it assumes you're getting an income now, so deduct the cost.
Well, that's right. And what trips people up is there's a different rule on job hunting expenses. You can't deduct for your first job. For a second, third job in the same line of work, they're deductible. So most people aren't aware that there's a different rule for moving expenses.
It's a reversal, isn't it? Yeah.
Exactly. But somebody, you know, let's say, you know, your son or daughter went to school, you know, in California last year and had to move back east to get a job. The cost of that move is deductible. And they need to take advantage. The great thing, too, that one's deductible even if you don't itemize. You know, 70% of the people claim the standard deduction. And until a few years ago, you had to itemize to get moving. But they finally changed it because these college kids, they usually are not itemizing. They're taking the standard deduction.
Right.
They don't own a home yet.
But you can deduct
can deduct moving expenses.
Oh, that's awesome to know. That makes a lot of difference for young people who are searching out that first job.
And those first deductions.
Oh, and those first deductions. Yes, indeed. Right, now, one of the other things that was interesting to me is that you said that so many people – take the short form filings, and you think that's a mistake in a number of cases.
Well, it can be a mistake. You know, people like the standard deduction. The standard deduction is a wonderful thing. You have to remember.
It's easy.
It's easy, and it makes sense only if adding up all your qualified deduction amounts exceeds your – it does not exceed your standard deduction. You want to take whichever is bigger.
Right.
You never want
to
take.
You need to do some careful calculating.
You have to add up the numbers or you're going to shortchange yourself. Now, there are people that we know who itemize even when they shouldn't because, case in point, once you turn 65, you get a bigger standard deduction than you had when you were 64. And a lot of people who retired don't know this. They keep cranking away itemizing and doing all this work when they don't need to, because the standard deduction would actually save them more money. The IRS is not going to tell you this. If you send in a Schedule A with itemized deductions that total less than your standard deduction amount, they're going to give you that less than your standard deduction amount.
It's our bad.
That's right.
It's our bad. What about child care?
Well, it's the thing about child care that we've noticed is it's sort of an anomaly, because Congress doesn't pay attention when it passes laws. If you have two or more children under 14, you can claim the child care credit against up to $5,000 of care, which is nice. But take it back. I got this wrong. I screwed up myself. The child care credit is good for the first $6,000 of expenses paid for two or more children. But the way most people pay for child care these days is through a flexible spending account at work. There's a $5,000 limit on how much you can funnel through a flex plan. Now, a flex plan is great because it's pre-tax money. It goes a long way. For most people, it's better than the tax credit, which for most people caps out at 20%. And if you're in the 28% tax bracket, it's better to have 28% pre-tax than a tax credit of 20%.
Absolutely.
But when Congress established the $5,000 limit for flex plans, they didn't change the $6,000 limit for the credit. So if you pay more than $5,000 for two or more kids, you can claim the credit on up to $1,000. It's going to save you another $200 worth of taxes, and that's more than you paid to listen to this program.
And listen, do you know something? I did not know this, but you can deduct baggage fees.
For business.
Tell me it's true.
For business. This is true. I mean, this is the thing we all gripe about. I looked at a fare the other day. It started out at $98 round trip. And by the time all the baggage fares, it was almost double that. It was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the thing that
it's aggravates.
I mean, there are some airlines that now charge you for a carry-on bag. But if you're traveling on business, all those extra expenses are business expenses. Write them off and let Uncle Sam pay part of that annoying fee for you.
Hey, that's a great idea. Well, you know, there's the other option is ship your stuff to your destination. And sometimes that's getting to be a more attractive alternative all the time.
More economic. I know my brother and his wife just went to Paris not long ago, and that's what they did with some of theirs, because it was so much cheaper to ship it rather than to pay for the extra bags on the overseas
flight. And if you have an overweight bag, good. God help you. I mean, you're going to be really paid.
I have been in airports before buying bags and stuffing two bags, so I didn't have one overstuffed bag.
Overweight. Yeah, because for two bags, it would probably be less. I don't know what the baggage fees.
Right.
It drives me crazy, and I'm always concerned about those scales. I'm not sure that they're really good. All right, anything else that we need to tell? We only got a minute here to tell our listeners how they're going to save a gazillions of dollars.
No, Shirley, I really think the most important thing is to go to Kiplinger.com and use that withholding calculator. It's simple. We're very proud of it. And it will tell you a magic number that if you put it on a W-4, it's going to put money in your pocket next payday. Most employers will implement a W-4 change with the next payroll. So if you're paid on the 15th of December, you still got a chance.
You still got a chance. You can do it.
And again, the average is $250.
Wow. I mean, that's a sizable little piece of change.
I think it is. And again, it's not going to eat away all of your refund next year. You're still going to get that refund.
Right.
And the other thing, I think.
But get it now so that the refund that may come in June, July, who knows?
And here's another reason to listen to us. On January 1, the payroll tax holiday is scheduled to disappear. That means if Congress doesn't do something, everybody's paycheck goes down on January 1 by 2%. It's going to be tough on everybody. You can avoid seeing your take-home pay reduced by filing that new W-4, cutting withholding, getting money when you earn it.
Do it, folks. That's the final word. Well, you've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here in Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This has been Kevin McCormally, who is the editorial director of Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, and he has been giving us great advice. And you can also go to the website, Kiplinger.com, to get all the information that we've discussed on this program today. I am Shirley Rooker, and we are certainly glad that you joined us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.